I, like most Americans, believe that the Second Amendment guarantees an individual the right to bear arms. I think we recognize the traditions of gun ownership that passed on from generation to generation, that hunting and shooting are part of a cherished national heritage. But I also believe that a lot of gun owners would agree that AK-47s belong in the hands of soldiers, not in the hands of criminals. That they belong on the battlefield of war, not on the streets of our cities. I believe the majority of gun owners would agree that we should do everything possible to prevent criminals and fugitives from purchasing weapons. That we should check someone's criminal record before they can check out a gun seller. That a mentally unbalanced individual should not be able to get his hands on a gun so easily. These steps shouldn't be controversial. They should be common sense. So I'm going to continue to work with members of both parties and with religious groups and with civic organizations to arrive at a consensus around violence reduction. Break.
To the Black Is Break with yours truly, KC Layman. We are back for season two of 2012. And at the table, we have our illustrious panel. Special guests tonight are Chris Layman of the Brothers Layman Sports Happy Hour, Toria Williams, Malcolm Darrell, or Brother Malcolm as you know him from Culture Connection, Jamila Farwell, and John Wood. And tonight's topic is gun control. And of course, this topic comes on the table in light of the massacre that happened most recently at the Batman premiere in Colorado. So the question is, with America not having gun control, is that turning America out of control? Do we need gun control to be in control?
Well, this was Chris speaking. There does need to be more control than what there is. America, you know, they got the Second Amendment, so they're always going to fight to make sure they have the right to carry arms. I think they need to do a better job of limiting the automatic weapons that get out.
Amen.
They don't really seem to check that. Well, I can be specific. They don't seem to check white folk. They seem to check black people, you know, as in T.I. wanted to get some automatic weapons, and he got...
T.I. was a felon, though.
Oh, no.
But I mean, if he was white, would they be checking for him still?
Yes, felons aren't supposed to have. Yes, felons. Yes,
they're
very strict with felons.
Right.
Really, this is Jamila.
If he was a rapper with no felon, you don't think they still would check him?
I think that the regulations do tend to be fairly strict with felons. I do also think, though, obviously, via the internet and you know several other channels, that it's a little too easy for folks to get guns, but. I would hesitate to make it a black and white thing.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying this. I just think that when it comes to blacks and guns, they would like to limit us as much as possible. Like, we can't.
But a lot of,
how easy
a lot
it is
folks
for us to go to the store
guns.
And actually get a gun? I don't know many black people who have. I know people who do shoot, but not on the level of I've got four or five automatic type weapons. Like, what the fuck are you going to do with those? I know.
Amen. I mean, I feel like folks having a lot of guns does tend to be like kind of a backwoods, you know, Oklahoma situation.
That's a generalization, and I know how much you
I know that it is. Hold
Jamila.
On. You didn't even let me finish. Shout out to my Midwesterners, okay? But I also know that, you know, my grandfather was a detective in the LAPD. My grandmother was a sheriff, and I've spent tons of nights at their houses over the years, and I had no idea until maybe 3 years ago the amount of guns that they keep in the house that I never saw. I just never saw them because I'm a kid and I wasn't supposed to, you know. But because
they were smart, they don't leave them out
they
for
know
you
how,
to.
That's
to
what
look
my grandmother
at.
Said. Yeah, but and I've never in my life held a gun, but I don't necessarily
really.
No, I've never held a gun, I've never shot a gun, I've never seen a gun, but my grandparents from St. Louis,
actually,
and my grandmother, like, hunted as a kid.
You should, actually.
Could handle a rifle. Yeah, I don't know that it would do any. I personally don't necessarily care for handguns, but I do think that, you know, if you want to have a gun in your house, you're absolutely entitled to do that. Mm-hmm.
Not agree with that, yeah.
What was the Michael Moore documentary?
Bowling for Columbine.
Yes. And we all know, I mean, you know, Michael Moore is great for what he does. It's a ton of propaganda, but there is some truth there. And it's extremely easy to get, slightly random, but I was listening to NPR, I think yesterday, and this dude on Amazon ordered a flat screen plasma for his house on Amazon and instead received a rifle.
Wow.
Right? In D.C., and the rifle that he received, it was illegal to have in the state of D.C., and he was just trying to, like, get on the phone with Amazon and the vendor, like, and UPS, like, why the fuck do I have this gun. Rifle, and where's my TV?
First of all, never trust a company named Oops.
Nobody wanted to take credit for that, though, you know? So I think that that is just one example of it's way too easy to get things online. I love the internet. But, you know, the sanctions there are problematic in terms of what you can and cannot do, what you can get shipped to your house that isn't even legal in your state.
I think also part of the issue is that we live in a country that really feeds on fear. And I think the idea of having a gun and arms is all about, like, I fear that someone is going to come in and hurt my family, so I must protect my family. I mean, I'm 34 years on this earth. I lived in urban neighborhoods, and I've never had a situation where my mother, who raised me, had to protect me with any kind of weapon. And we didn't have any gates, you know, we just had a door and some locks. And, you know, I mean, obviously we live thanking God for every grace and mercy moment that we've had. But it's interesting that in certain parts of America that it's like, you will not, you know, it's this sort of idea of like, you will not take away my right to own a gun. But I'm like, okay, so why do you need the gun? What are you trying to be protected from? I don't have a problem with people using it for sport. But there's a problem when we live in a country where somebody can get an automatic rifle. I mean, when you think about how many shots this kid got off, it's because he had the automatic rifle. If he had a handgun, the first two shots, people would have been ducking. But he was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I mean, that's how fast he... I mean, so of course 70 people are going to be injured or killed with a weapon that has that ability to do such damage in a short amount of time. It's a weapon of warfare. So I just wanted to say that I think a lot of this idea about, you know, gun control and not taking away people's rights, I know it's the Second Amendment, but it just seems to be really fear-based, and that just concerns me in general.
This is John Wood speaking, and let's remember, as we're having this conversation, it doesn't just come on the heels of the Aurora shooting. This also comes on the heels of the massacre at the Sikh temple.
Right.
Exactly. What was that? Was that Wisconsin recently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Right. Yeah. I think he killed 7 people, including himself. The shooter did. The gun control debate is sort of a complex one in a sense. On the one hand, I think that most people think that responsible Americans should have the right to have firearms. At the same time, there should be limits and conditions placed upon those rights. I think most of us would agree that people just do not need assault weapons for any practical purpose unless they're a soldier and serving in an active duty. You don't need to hunt with an assault rifle. You generally don't need an assault rifle to protect yourself from domestic intruders. Now, there's some people who think that we shouldn't have guns at all. It would probably be worth reminding those folks that millions of real crimes are actually prevented by people, private citizens, responsibly using their guns to defend themselves all the time. And many of those situations, people are convinced that if they had not had a gun to defend themselves, say if they're in their home or even walking down a dark street late at night, that they themselves might have been killed. So there's a place for responsible gun ownership. But I think that there are some practical things we can do to limit the ability of criminals to cause the kind of damage that we saw in Aurora. Limit clip sizes. Don't allow, you know, keep enforce, renew and continue to enforce the assault weapons ban. I think those are sort of common sense things that most people could agree on, but for whatever reason, building a political consensus, I think, to keep some of these restrictions consistently enforced is difficult to a certain degree anyway.
Right. And there definitely has to be something to address, because while I'm sitting here, I'm listening, and it brought to mind the stand your ground rule or the stand your ground law in Florida. And so in some ways, you know, in that particular case, a law like that can turn on people, as we witnessed with the Trayvon Martin case. And right. It's, you know, people are kind of like, well, you have the right to stand your ground, defend yourself. And I believe people should have the right to have weapons. But then when you think of something like that, and I don't think Trayvon Martin case is the only one that has happened like that. Mm-hmm. In fact, we know it isn't. And then in reverse, the mother or the woman who was really standing her ground against her husband who had beat her in Florida, and then she in return is like hemmed up right away.
Right.
Well, I mean, I just want to respond to, thank you, Toria. I just wanted to respond to Brother John's comment, because one of the things that comes to mind is when I think about the Constitution, and I think about, you know, we're very quick to, in this country, just stand behind our founding document as if it's not malleable or cannot evolve. And it's just interesting, just the historical, if we took a historical look at the Second Amendment and just why it exists, why this idea of bearing arms is so important. Because part of me wants to say, well, if we had laws in place where people, I don't know, I'm one of those people that I'm like, shoot, you want to teach people not to steal anymore? Cut somebody's hand off the first time they steal. I know that sounds very drastic, but I just, those ideas, that's very drastic, I know. But something about, there's something about this idea of like not being so lenient with our laws and people having the ability to get away with stuff that I just, I wonder, and I'm only putting this out here as a discussion topic and fodder for this conversation about the idea of like, What historically is important about the Second Amendment, and what in the 21st century could help it evolve?
What's important is the actual right to bear arms. I mean, I don't know. I personally don't take an issue with that. I think, you know, like stand your ground, that obviously is a very extreme, very unfortunate byproduct of the amendment. I mean, yeah, the Constitution is malleable, but it's also, you know, not to a degree. I mean, these are the basic inalienable rights that every American has. And I think that people should be able to bear arms. I think long before there was a culture of fear, people had guns and will continue to, and that's okay. But via the internet, people that should not have guns can get guns easily, and that's a problem.
Yeah, you can get them anywhere. I mean, if I really wanted to get a gun, I'm sure I could figure out a way to get a gun. As far as the cultural fear, I think that's been around forever. I think it's been a long time.
I don't think it's been around forever. I think it's a...
How could you say that when the Constitution that you're quoting didn't even think you were human when it was created?
What are we talking about? How could I say what?
I'm just saying, like, the culture of fear? Yeah, the culture of fear has been here since the founding of the country.
I disagree. I absolutely disagree with that. I feel like the culture of fear is something, for me personally, that has pervaded within the last, like, 20 years via the media and, you know, the things that we choose to focus on.
Chris, what did you mean by cultural fear exactly? Were you talking
about what causes? I guess in the sense, if you're saying that the media has made it to where it's actually, now we have a term for it. But I mean, we're talking about guns as a right of, I'm scared of something happening, so I'm going to arm myself.
That's not a culture of fear, though. I don't think that, I mean.
That's sort of pervasive through human history.
Yeah, I think it's been around.
The culture of fear specifically is something, you know, that addresses what we've gone through in America, let's say, where, you know, yeah, the media does do a job and does do a number, you know, on our heads about things that we need to be concerned about. And that to me is something that...
Well, it's blown up more because you have more access to stuff now. So it can be called a culture of fear, and you actually have...
Now we have a label.
We have more technology. We have, you know, a lot more people in the country.
I mean, it sounds like you're talking about people carrying guns because they're afraid, which I don't know that is the same thing.
Well, I brought up the... I really started the idea of fear because I was saying that, you know, ultimately, what is the point of having... I'm not saying I disagree with people having the right to bear arms, but I'm wondering what is the impetus for us having the right to bear arms and looking at the historical context for why it was even part... why it is the Second Amendment.
Well, yeah, I'd like to comment on the Second Amendment issue very quickly because I tend to be much more conservative on constitutional issues. I don't really like looking at the Constitution as a document that is necessarily living and breathing, because sometimes people take that attitude and figure, well, I can sort of make it say whatever I want it to say. But having said that, I actually agree with you, Malcolm, on the Second Amendment, in that I think that the principle for which the Second Amendment was initially established doesn't really translate to the way conservatives generally want to interpret it today, because I think the wording of the Second Amendment says something like the people shall have the right to bear arms, the bearing of arms being necessary to the protection of the populace, or something like that. During the time period when the legislation was drafted, of course, people on the frontier had to worry about marauding bands of Indians coming through and, you know, right, fighting with them before any sort of federal force, of which there wasn't much in the beginning years of this country, could get there to protect them. So in that context, you know, people had to defend themselves because government really wasn't capable of doing it for them. There was no police force that was able to defend them from external threats. Nowadays, of course, we do have a military. We do have police. Our threats seem to be internal, and inasmuch as people do have to worry about common criminals breaking into their homes and so forth, I do think handguns and the right to bear arms of limited but appropriate power, let's say, is right and just, but I don't think it's inconsistent with the intention of the Founding Fathers in terms of simply protecting the people, to limit the types of guns we can freely purchase, or the criteria condition under which we can purchase them. And secondly, I like to say this too. I think people get a sense when we talk about culture of fear and so forth. In a way, I actually do think, now I'm not talking, Malcolm, about the broad historical sort of context that you're talking about, but in terms of the evolution of the media in the last couple decades, people get the sense that murder, as a phenomenon in our society, has just been sort of increasing in recent years. In terms of a percentage of population to murder ratio, it really hasn't. Murder rates have been declining since the 80s and since the crack epidemic went down. Now, what you have more of are these sort of one-off events like we saw in Aurora, and before that, Virginia Tech and Columbine, where one person goes and wounds or kills a bunch of people. And that is disturbing. But in terms of the overall trends, the murder rates, if anything, they've been going down over the last number of years. It's just media outlets have been going up, and individual sensational crime.
Access to information.
Exactly. And the one thing that the media... the one thing that the media does perpetuate, too, if anybody even bothers to watch the news after 7 p.m., all that it's talking about is bad stuff that
violence.
Has happened. All violence. And so it would make a person think that, oh my God, our city is just riddled with crime, or any major urban city, any major city is just riddled with crime. Because this person was shot over here, this person was stabbed over here, there was a fire here. It's just full of tragedy. And so that's what kind of perpetuates this sense of fear, I think, amongst all of us, that's become heightened, you know.
Yeah, and what I don't think people who make the laws understand is, or maybe some people do understand, I've shot firearms and it is cool. I can totally see somebody getting addicted to that. I mean, because it is somewhat of a rush.
It's a power trip.
And you want to, you know, get better, and then it's like, oh, well, now I mastered this. Let me take it up a notch.
It's the ultimate toy, right?
Yeah.
But I no mean, one's
there,
talking
about. There's one thing to like really enjoy.
Trip. It's a power
shooting
trip.
Firearms, though, but to actually go out and shoot people, you are a sociopath.
And here's a question I want to put on the table, which is going to be a race situation. I'm going to make this very.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Generally, black and white. When we're talking about putting these kind of rules on the types of firearms that we're dealing with, if we look at black on black crime, we cannot say that there are not issues where there aren't black people shooting other black people. But how often do we see situations where we have black folks with semi-automatic weapons causing these sort of massacre-type situations? Like, historically, DC sniper aside...
That's the only thing I can think of.
We really don't have these situations happening in the urban cities, in the black community. When we have these situations happen, like Columbine, like the Sikh temple, like Colorado, it's in these sort of
And it's not talked about. And it's not talked about. It's interesting. On Facebook, there was a picture that went around, and it says something like, if I was, it was, it's a picture of the, I'm sorry, what's the gentleman's name?
I saw that picture, and it just felt like propaganda, though.
But it's true, though. I mean, it said, if I was black, I'd be a thug. If I was Muslim, I'd be a terrorist. But I'm white, and so it's mental illness.
Right.
And that's the truth, Jamila. It is the absolute truth. When's the last time you've seen a black person?
I feel like domestic terrorism.
When's the last time you've seen a black person receive mental illness? When's the last time you saw anyone who was of Middle Eastern descent not immediately thought of as a terrorist? And the thing that no one is really talking about in the media, which is very frustrating to me about these whole moments, is that they are primarily being, they are acts that are being caused by white men, and they are not the worst massacres or shooters in the history of the country. That's a misnomer that I feel like needs to be completely dismantled. This idea that this Aurora shooting, because that basically says that none of the stuff that happened, whether it's with Native Americans being massacred or anything historically that's happened in this country.
Well, that stat refers to a single individual shooting that many people in that short a period.
But that's what I'm saying. That's, to me, I feel like history is being rewritten.
No, I mean, but can you name a particular event where somebody shot 70 people in a single moment?
No, because historically there's a lot of incidences of white-on-black crime post-slavery have been stricken from the historical
records. Well, I totally understand that, but I just mean as a purely technical matter. It's not as if they had automatic weapons.
I can, and I actually put it on Facebook. I wish I could bring up my Facebook, because there was a I went and found an actual researched someone who actually took issue with this idea of, that the media kept calling this the worst mass shooting in history of America, blah, 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 blah. And this person went and found it. But I'll send that to you.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I think, though, we do have to take a look at it, because we have mass shootings in the hood when we had, and maybe not so much now, it's gone down, but in the hype of the gang, that was mass. Drive-by shootings were like massive, 2-3 bodies, but they wouldn't, you're never going to call a gangbanger mentally ill.
No.
They would never even say, let me examine this kid and see what in this kid would make someone jump in a car.
He's a criminal and he's a thug.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. Right. I mean, if we're talking about, you know, the sentencing that, you know, African Americans get and or black folks get and how they're treated in the justice system. But drive-bys also typically, I don't know. I haven't actually ever been someplace where there was a drive-by, but I don't know. They were taking out like 8 people, you know, like actually killing 8 people. I feel
in
like
some
it was
circumstances,
more.
Yeah. If it's like a party or a hood day, or that's just like what's going to happen, or maybe not 8 people at that one setting, but 2 or 3 or maybe 8 in that day, like hitting up different neighborhoods.
And I'm sorry, it doesn't matter if it was
Latino gangs
as well.
I mean, we remember
gangs.
The big hype in Torrance when the Latinos were just really going hard after
black people. Well, you couldn't go through the Harbor Gateway.
Right.
That was a few years ago.
I almost want to say it really doesn't matter that he got to kill, injure 70 people. They were human lives, and the people in the drive-by shootings are also human lives. And so the point I was trying to make is that the labels that get put on people based on where your racial background, there is a discrepancy. And let's just be realistic. I mean, I don't to this day, just to, since we're there, I think people would be more disgusted at the idea of OJ than they would Timothy McVeigh. And Timothy McVeigh is one of the worst domestic terrorists in the history of the country.
And mind you, the whole situation
depends on who you ask.
Right. And the situation with OJ is so, it's speculative. There still is no, like, we still don't have any true evidence behind whether the man is guilty or not guilty, but we do know that the system and the people went after him.
Exactly. I guess it's the point I'm trying to make is that it is proven evidence. You know, about Timothy McVeigh
and speculation with OJ.
The horrific, and you know, people probably hate the fact that I even brought up OJ, but I'm just saying it's a perfect example of like people go hard in the paint on OJ, and I'm like, here you have a man who destroyed hundreds of lives.
I don't really know anybody who likes Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah,
I really don't know where you're going.
No, I'm saying as a perception of like.
Well, again, this depends on who you're talking about. I just can't associate that with anybody I know. So, but look, on the subject of mental illness,
I didn't say that people like Timothy.
No, I understand what you mean, but you know, that people are soft.
Conservatives are coming hard on me today. Come on, y'all. Let's go.
Hey, I'm consistently outnumbered.
You are. You are.
Be sure to check us out on blackyearsonline.com.
Let's get the latest live now from Colorado in the legal case building now against Holmes.
Our coverage continues with ABC's Brandy Hitt, who's live outside the courthouse in Centennial. And Brandy, tell us about Holmes, his appearance, demeanor, and what legal observers are saying about him.
Well, Paul, it was very bizarre. Obviously, if you've seen the video, you've seen the bright orange hair, you've seen that dazed look in his eyes. And also, something you may not have seen is that he didn't address anybody in the court. He never looked at the judge. He didn't even look at his own attorney during that hearing. So some people are speculating maybe, in fact, he did suffer a mental break. There are others right now who say, well, maybe this is an act. This is a smart guy who got a degree in neuroscience. Mm-hmm. But we did speak with ABC's Dan Abrams earlier, and he says, you know what? If he is going to go the route of a defense that there's some sort of mental defect, you're going to be seeing a lot more of this behavior and him looking like this a lot more in court.
No, but on the subject of mental illness, I don't really think that this is a label that's thrown to all these white serial killers. The guy in Tucson, Arizona, yes, because apparently he was, and you can look at some of the things he wrote on his blog, and you can, you know, you wouldn't have to have a degree in psychology to necessarily be able to. But this guy in Colorado, he's going to plead insanity, I think, because that's probably his only legal option. But I don't think he's going to get off on that. So I don't think anybody's really convinced that guy was mentally ill, because there's not much evidence behind it. And the white supremacist guy who shot up the Sikh temple, I really haven't heard anybody suggest that he was mentally ill. The guy was just a racist freak.
The
subject of whether or not there's a different perception of black killers and white killers or murderers is definitely a legitimate conversation, but I don't think it's necessarily fair to say that they always jump to the mental insanity label, you know. Usually, I mean, they're different. In what cases? I admit.
Colorado, yes. Even the way the media portrays it is like we see him, he's gazing into the sky, he doesn't speak. That was mental illness. They brought that up. The case.
Was that ever officially diagnosed? Exactly.
No, but that's how they paint the picture for people to think.
Or maybe even. Okay, and you know what? I'll retract that just for the sake of this argument. Maybe it's not mental illness, but I will say that white people, more times out of 10, are not portrayed as people who are scary people, that are evil people.
I don't think anybody has ever tried to say that Charles Manson is mentally ill.
Let me finish my point. That they have gone astray, and that look at their great parents, and what has happened. Oh, maybe it was the video games. Maybe it was these influences. Maybe they were bullied. You never hear.
No one said that about Charles Manson.
Okay, that's like one example. We're talking about these modern examples.
There is a part of the media that tries to humanize.
I just can't believe that you can't agree with me that black people get the short of the end of the stick on this.
Because there's a part of the media that tries to humanize those people that are sociopaths.
Thank you. That's the only point I'm trying to make.
They talk about the relationship. Hold on, let me finish. They talk about the relationship that they try to develop with people outside. You know, like, oh, they have a wife and they have kids and they've done this and they've done that, and their church associations and affiliations. And when we're talking about black people who are also accused of murder, we don't get any of that information. They're just criminals. I don't even think
Trayvon Martin, I've heard reports, well, you know, he does smoke weed, so that's why he deserved to get shot and killed.
Right.
You know, it's like it goes to a whole nother level of like, but this is a child and he's a human being. Doesn't he deserve the same story about his life, about where he was going, that any other American deserves?
I think we could all agree that by and large, the nation has been certainly more supportive of Trayvon Martin than they have of
George Zimmerman.
Absolutely. I'm talking about the media. If we're talking about the media, the media by and large has absolutely come out on Trayvon Martin's side, And
ABC went as far as the doctor, the 911 call on. That Zimmerman made to make it seem like he shot him explicitly because he was black. Now, I'm not saying that he did or didn't, but I'm saying ABC, I think it was ABC, it might have been CBS, but it was one of the three major networks, went as far as to deliberately doctor a tape to make it seem like George Zimmerman said when they asked him why he was chasing him that, well, he's black. They literally omitted something between the first question that the cop asked and him saying he's black to make it seem like he offered that as a justification for what he was about to do. So, no, obviously they weren't on Zimmerman's side in the first place. And the New York Times, coming right out the gate, referring to him as a white man. And then when it came out that he was Hispanic, they called him a white Hispanic, when they've never used the term white Hispanic in the entire 100 years of their existence as a publication. I mean, I'm sure Malcolm's correct that in some media circles, you know, some outlets, I think, probably did come out the bat on Zimmerman's side, too, you know.
Yeah, Fox News, who cares?
Well, yeah, I mean, Fox is
the number one rated cable news station in the country, and that means a lot of people in America watch it.
Yeah, but you said the media as if that just sort of blanketly characterizes the
No, but I'm media. Saying in general, and I know Jamila hates generalizations, but that's the world we live in. In general, the news will absolutely sway toward the negative on any portrayal of black people.
Or any person of color that commits a murder.
Well, you know, ABC, NBC, CBS, they each get nightly much vaster audiences than Fox News does because Fox is a cable program. Their network, you know. New York Times is one of the most widely circulated papers in the country. So, I mean, I think the media balance probably...
But it's also a very liberal-leaning
paper. It is, but it's still got a very wide circulation. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about the media. But, look, I don't think it's worth fighting over because I agree with you to a certain extent, you know. Look, there are perceptual issues, obviously, and if you're asking me the question, do some white people, do maybe a decent percentage of white people, look at their own and think to themselves, how could a person who looked like me do something like this? There must be some extenuating circumstance, and then if they're presented with a black person who may have done something similar, they might simplify and say, well, person's black kind of speaks for itself. Yes, I would certainly agree. I mean, that's human nature to a certain extent. Of course, black people do it to a certain extent, too. You hear about somebody's wife getting killed, black people just think, some white person did that. You know?
But the difference, I think, is in the news, they're going to make it known to us if it's a black criminal. It, when a car is stolen, two black male suspects. I know it's white when they don't say who it is. To be honest with you, when we're talking crimes, just like the most recent ones that are happening in the nail shops, two African Americans, black man, black woman. When they leave color out, that's an indicator to me that it's not a black person.
You know, honestly, I can't honestly. I mean, I hear these reports. I can't honestly say that I've ever heard them leave out the ethnic description because it's kind of hard to identify somebody if you don't include the ethnicity. I'm not saying you guys are wrong. I'm just saying I'm going to go do some research on that now that you've mentioned it, because I never, ever recall them just saying, oh, male suspect does this without saying he's either white or black or Hispanic or whatnot, you know. So, I mean, that's something that is provable. I should be able to prove that that is either true or false by tomorrow, you know.
And full disclosure, a lot of the things that the examples I've given are anecdotal, and they're only by my personal experience watching news. And I look for this stuff, and people are like, oh, Malcolm, you're so paranoid. Like, a total tangent right now. I mean, my boss and I had a sort of disagreement about, you know, the Olympics coverage, and I felt like the way they were talking about Gabby Douglas versus the way they were talking about the other athletes on the Olympic team was just completely different. It was skewed. It was just skewed different, and the way that sports commentators talk about black athletes versus the way they talk about white athletes, and I'm just saying that difference exists, and specifically since it's about gun control, to bring it back, that for me, like let's talk about Virginia. Was it West Virginia?
Virginia Tech.
Excuse me. I mean, I never really heard. I mean, even watching that, first of all, the shooter was Asian.
Yeah.
So you really didn't really hear anything about, like, I mean, there was definitely no, just from how I perceived watching it, there was never any thought like, this guy's a thug, he's a criminal, or he's, it seemed like it was a student who just lost his mind and just, he broke and he went and killed some people. And that was sort of how it was portrayed. And I get the sense, and this is just a feeling, and I actually don't think it's a feeling, but it's fine because I know that it's important to have research to back up a point. But I just get the feeling that if a black person in this country came into a theater and killed 70 people, that it just would be a different story. The coverage would be completely different. And I just want us to at least admit that those biases still exist in American, in the American psyche, and that the way we report things about people of color versus white people, there is definitely a
significant
difference.
Would you say that the DC sniper was portrayed as a thug?
Absolutely not.
But I started this conversation off by saying this: the DC sniper was an anomaly. Aside.
But yeah. See, this is the reason why I mentioned that.
Because that's the only one. I'm sorry, John. When we were talking about just the conversation about mass shootings like that, that was the only incident that we could pinpoint a black person was behind
exactly.
it.
Understood. But. I think it's also worth acknowledging the similarities between certain types of crime and the way that they're generally paired to their motivations, not just from the standpoint of media bias, but just from objective common sense. We know, of course, that there's a lot of gun violence in the inner cities, and we know, of course, that most of it arises over gang disputes. And I'm not trying to be harsh or anything. I understand the extenuating societal circumstances that has made this the case, but nevertheless, if you have people fighting over street territory, well, that's criminal act. If you're robbing someone, it's a criminal act. If you kill someone during the course of gang violence, thug, criminal act, you know. If you go and shoot up a room full of people, or if you take a sniper rifle and decide to terrorize a city, yes, it is a criminal act, but it's different from the sort of obviously discernible motives that come into play during gang violence or violence that's used to come up materially or something. That's where the mental illness factor seems to come in.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I can't even handle this right now, y'all.
No.
Really?
No, that's different.
Because I
want Malcolm to address what I'm saying directly. Okay. Because if I go into a room and I shoot up a bunch of people, but I don't take anybody's money, I don't take anybody's wallet, I don't gain any turf from it, I don't gain any power from it, it's just something that comes from my own satisfaction. By the way, to me, that's much more disturbing than a person who gets into a gang fight.
Agreed.
But yes. Okay, but not every gang.
This is why the media didn't identify the DC sniper in that way, because he fit a more sociopathic frame of behavior, like the fellow at Virginia Tech did, like the fellow at Tucson did. And it's not to say that all these people were clinically mentally ill necessarily, but it's a bit more logical when you see that pattern of killing, regardless of the
ethnicity. But they're both mental illnesses. We live in this earth as human beings, and nobody should be killing anybody. So regardless of the fact that you decided to plot to kill 70 people, or you go down the street and you randomly want to shoot people, that is not...
Well, but
something is not clicking correctly. There's a sickness behind that, too.
Exactly.
Well, I agree with that in a broad sense, but I think your argument is more with the clinical way that we define psychosis rather than media portrayal. Because if I kill you because I'm broke and I need to feed my family and you have money, I mean, yeah, sure, I'm morally sick for doing that. But it's a little bit different than me killing you just to say, hey, I wonder what it would be like to kill this person.
But
right?
We don't
wrong,
even
though.
Investigate
well, no, they're both,
to
they're
that
both,
extent.
They're,
when
well,
it comes to the gang
they're
violence,
both
that's
wrong.
Never even
These
investigated.
Are different mindsets. The criminal mindset and the sociopathic mindset. You can say there's similarities, I'm sure, but in terms of the vernacular of psychology, these are definitely different fields of study. One person at least perceives that he has to do something, whereas the other person simply knows that he wants to. Those are very different states of mind.
And I get your point, Wood, but I agree with Toria in the sense that I don't think the same sort of energy is even put behind studying the mental capacity of the gang member or members that goes through that sort of practice
right.
of violence. Nobody
probably,
even
because
nobody,
not
nobody
every gang member even does that.
I
and not
probably,
to cut you off, there are certain that. Ones that made news or made it big. Tukey Williams, Monster. These men were known for killing many people. You know, every gangbanger is not just out there doing drive-bys hitting 10 and 12 people. These people will walk up and shoot innocent people because when gangbanging started, it wasn't all about just hitting your rival. Your initiation was to take somebody out that
just
was innocent. So there has to be some type of an investigation into their mindset. And it never really is when you talk about those kind of guys. When you talk about gangs or the portrayed thug, it's not an idea of does he possibly have mental illness. It's automatically the assumption this is a criminal. He's on a power trip.
He's an animal, and that's how animals act.
or you know, exactly, or he's on a power trip. This is about turf.
This is the thing. I don't get the sense that, at least for me personally, and maybe I'm just not paying enough attention. That's certainly possible. I don't get the sense that there are very many people walking around looking for excuses to really feel sympathetic towards the Columbine killers or to feel sympathetic towards the fellow in Aurora. I mean, I don't know a single white person who has any sympathy for what's going to happen to that person or to the person who shot up the Sixth Center, you know?
And I'm certainly not implying that, but I'm saying that there's a different perception that would make you believe that if a black person were to murder, mental illness isn't behind it. The only time we consider, one time that mental illness is considered when we talk about murder is obviously when the mothers kill their children.
Well, that's about the one time
when we hear.
But see, this is why I keep going back to the DC sniper, because this was about the only incident you can think of where a black person's murder pattern sort of fit the same.
Random killing.
Yeah, exactly, Jamila. Sort of fit the same. What would you say? Sort of same blueprint, for lack of a better metaphor, as some of these other killings we're talking about. And in that instant, the media treatment of that incident was, I think, remarkably similar to all these other events we're talking about.
Right, that and the fact that he was working with a child, all those things combined.
Extremely creepy.
Yeah,
but they still took the route, you know, like, okay, this is somebody from the islands, and they bring up, even with the guy who attacked the homeless man in Florida, the Haitian.
That bit his face.
The first thing I heard was like they had talked about him practicing voodoo. Like they totally jumped over mental illness and went straight into voodoo. Like I was like, damn, so we just don't get a chance. Not that anybody's sympathetic.
But my thing is there's a difference when you think someone is a cold-hearted, animalistic, barbaric person. And if you think that someone, because of mental illness, which people are very sympathetic for, many people have mental illness in their families, so that's something you can sort of attach to and say, from a human standpoint, how could they prevent that? They've been struggling with that. They just didn't get their medicine or their pills. They're bipolar. They were acting out of the norm. You know, and so to me, that's the issue I want to deal with is this perception. When you go into mental illness, there keeps the humanity of the person involved, right?
Right. And
versus treating someone like they're a barbaric, like they're an animal, like they're a savage, like they cannot be. Those are the sort of subtle moments that happen that obviously they can go over a lot of people's heads. But when you start to add that up and you talk about imagery, if you talk about Birth of a Nation and that horrific imagery that has stayed with black people for centuries, those are the things that to me are continuing to permeate our psyche about people of color, specifically men of color, black men versus white men who do similar or are often...
Yeah.
And see, something else that happens too, I'm sorry, John, is when you give people the label sociopath, it has a different connotation than when you just call somebody blatantly a thug. Even though both should be equally as scary and equally as fearful, people like Jeffrey Dahmer, people like Timothy McVeigh, this guy in Colorado, they all of a sudden become these interesting people that need to be studied.
And Charles Manson is the same way.
Yeah, I was going to mention Manson first. Like, they become these interesting people that need to be studied, that need to be documented, that need to be interviewed. They get platforms in which to talk and express themselves. People who follow them and were part of their whole milieu become subjects of interest. And all of a sudden, they become almost like cult icons in whatever moment that they're in. And that same, what that does again is just begin to humanize and make this person who should still be very, very scary, even more scary maybe than that common street thug, somebody who's interesting.
Well, you know, I don't disagree with your analysis. My only, I guess the only thing I'm troubled about is just the fact that we're basing this purely on race. There's another category of people we haven't talked about. See, all these different white people and the Asian fellow and what was his name? Well, the DC sniper. Again, they all fit the same pattern of mass murder, and they're all treated pretty much the same way. Most of them were white, but most murders happen most murders are committed in this country by white people in terms of absolute numbers. And the vast majority of them are not looked upon as having mental illness. Most of them kill for the same reasons most anybody kills. You're angry, or you're trying to steal, or you're trying to get revenge, or you find your wife in bed with another man. But the vast majority of white people who commit murders are not looked at as interesting psycho cases.
But how many people know that, John? Like, this just hearing you say that in itself is revelatory, because I'm like, wow, I wonder how many people in this country would think that white people keep... I bet you if you did like a Jay Leno segment, or let's just say Bill Maher segment, and you went around, you asked people...
I definitely understand what you're saying, and I think I agree with you, but you're sort of walking onto a different subject. My point is just about the media portrayal of these people individually on a racial basis. And we're talking about mental health and that they always stick that to the white killer. No, they always stick that to the mass killer. Is basically what I'm saying, you know.
And the point, and we came to that point because we said the point I was trying to make was that those often, why is it that those often are white men?
Well, I can say this though, and this kind of goes
because they do it. They commit more mass murders than black people.
Okay,
do, or
so
Asians
that's the
do.
Point we're trying to make is that because they if they're committing these, but
in the one
murders,
instance where we can refer to where a black person did something similar, he was treated the same way. And I think we
you could say black, I don't even think
we disagree on this, Malcolm.
Okay, but I think we do, but okay.
But what I can say, I think America at whole is getting tired. And this is unfortunate because people that really are suffering from mental illness are going to get the short end of the stick, because I honestly think America is getting tired of it. Like you guys both said, people aren't being sympathetic to these people anymore. And you will hear equally whites and blacks go, yeah, okay, mental illness. Because people are getting angry now that it's continuously happening.
So the other part about mental illness as well is when we're dealing with people who are in these situations, there's also an explanation of how they're geniuses in some way. So like the dude in Colorado that just kept talking about how he was getting his PhD in chemistry or biochemistry or whatever. The amount of thinking and plotting and planning that goes into these mass murders. A lot of them don't happen just by happenstance. They are well thought out, pre-planned, well calculated. You know, I kept thinking to myself, wow. Everybody
that's one
that
reason
was
why
hyped,
he's probably not going to get off on insanity. By
right, now. But I was like, everybody who was excited that night about going to see Batman, this man had the same level of excitement, if not more, because he knew what he was going there to do. How crazy and scary is that? You know what I mean? And so, like, to me, that part of it is what kills me. It's like, don't try to convince me that this person is mentally ill when on some level they are, like, borderline genius in the way that they go about making these things happen.
Well, you know, I was watching CNN. They were talking to some forensic psychologist, and they asked him about this person's insanity, insanity defense, and whether or not, you know, you could look at this person and tell that he was mentally disturbed. And he basically made the distinction that I think maybe Malcolm made earlier between some of these different types of skills. And he basically said, well, look, he said, there's definitely something wrong with this person's brain that he could have such a moral vacuum within himself to be willing to commit these murders and to do it willingly and to enjoy doing that. He said something along the lines of, don't misunderstand me. There's something wrong with him mentally. He said, but his illness doesn't match the clinical definition, I guess, of the sort of psychosis we look for and that we observed in the case of the Arizona shooting. He said, precisely because this person planned it all out with such intricacy and step by step, walk into a place and simply kill people at random without any real coherent thought attached to it. So that's, according to this expert, that was the way he sort of distinguished the difference between pure psychosis and a person who may otherwise be rational, but just has sort of no moral center at all.
Interesting. Well, we thank you so much for joining us. Please tune in for the next Black is Black. Peace.